Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is the recording of our Tuesday evening Dhamma class from Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey, on April 10th, 2018. This Tuesday's class is the week 12 class of our 2018 12-week Dhamma study based on my book, The Truth of Happiness. Our study this week is on the five hindrances. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace.
All right, so we've covered, as always in this course of study that we do over every winter, we cover a huge amount of material in a short few weeks. And what we're going to talk about today, these hindrances, is something that's often overlooked, but it's so important that the sutta that I'm going to cite is only one sutta where the Buddha addresses these problems, because the experience of hindrances without the proper mindfulness is just that. It'll cause us to leave the Dhamma or create different Dhammas to fit these views rather than recognize these things as hindrances as taught by an awakened human being. A mind rooted in, these are my words, a mind rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths will grasp upon and cling to these five hindrances. Clinging to wrong or ignorant views is subtle and pervasive. Tenacious clinging to wrong views is the strategy a mind rooted in ignorance uses to continue to ignore its own ignorance. Does everybody understand that? I know it sounds circular, but I'm describing a discursive circular way of thinking, and this is exactly what the Buddha described in the Nagara Sutta, how he got stuck in this feedback loop, and it wasn't until he developed true insight into the three marks of existence was he able to extricate himself from that. And that is so important. The Buddha always referred to himself as a rightly self-awakened one, which points directly to the task that we all have if we're to awaken. We have to become rightly self-awakened ourselves. We have to do it ourselves. And these hindrances that we're going to talk about are the common block or the common strategy that a mind rooted in ignorance will continue to employ to ignore its own ignorance. You know, and the longer I do this and the more I'm so fortunate to have this seat because it really has me looking at how pervasive the problem of ignorance is. And I really understand why the Buddha, upon his awakening, said that that is the primary problem. That's what he described in Independent Origination, that it is ignorance of Four Noble Truths that leads to all manner of suffering. This manner of circular deluded thinking is itself one of the three defilements of greed, aversion, and that deluded thinking. These are those three defilements are what the Buddha describes as, again, the common problem that we all experience as human beings. And none of us can escape this unless we develop the Eightfold Path. It is precisely deluded thinking that continues to cultivate the conditions rooted in ignorance that cause all manner of suffering described in the Paticca-samuppada Sutta, the primary sutta on dependent origination. You remember, as we were talking about karma and rebirth a few weeks ago, how the Buddha described karma as the field, consciousness the seed, meaning ongoing thinking rooted in ignorance, consciousness the seed, and craving is the moisture that causes all manner of those deluded, all the effects of that deluded thinking to manifest in our lives. So we are planting the seeds of our own suffering when you look at it that way, through that continued ignorance. This is the Navarana Sutta, and I don't think I've ever talked about this here. The Buddha addressed those gathered. Friends, there are these five hindrances. Sensual desire is a hindrance. Ill will is a hindrance. Laziness, indifference, and drowsiness, I got to say it this way, is a hindrance. I've been trying to figure out why there's actually about 11 hindrances that are mentioned in these five, but the ones that are listed are very similar. And I really think that's the reason why, is to keep the concise nature of what we're looking at here. In other words, laziness, indifference, and drowsiness is really all part of the same thing that manifests in those different ways as laziness or drowsiness. And that's all to be seen in its proper context as simply resistance to developing the Dhamma. Restlessness and anxiety is a hindrance. Doubt, uncertainty, and skepticism of the Dhamma is a hindrance. And so I know that there's those out there who will say, yeah, well, didn't the Buddha teach to be skeptical of everything and to have this great doubt? The Buddha never taught that. And the justification for even saying that, the Kalama Sutta is a sutta that's often used to say, well, the Buddha taught to do this. We need to be skeptical. But the Buddha never taught that. Think about this awakened human being spending his whole life teaching something and then saying, by the way, you don't really have to listen to this. The explanation of this is in both of the books, the letter to the Kalamas. In that letter to the Kalamas, or the Kalama Sutta, the Buddha told those, that sutta was presented to a group of people that happened to be on a trade route. And so all the spiritual teachers of that time were coming through there, and every single one of them said, listen to me, I have the one true Dhamma. Nobody else knows what they're talking about. And one after another came through there, and the whole town was confused. And they asked the Buddha, how do we know? We hear the same thing that you're saying from everyone else that comes through. Why should we listen to you? And the Buddha said, don't listen to me. Develop what I'm teaching you and see for yourself. Ehepisiko. He never said to take anything on faith because he knew that that was impossible. But he did know if somebody actually developed the Dhamma as he presented it, they would know for themselves. They would know for sure. And that whole notion of question everything he said, what the Buddha's quote was, if you're uncertain, question me. Question me directly. Ask me. And he was saying that because he understood that if they go ask someone else, he's going to get their view about what the answer is. If you're uncertain about my Dhamma, ask me directly. That's not licensed to question everything. And the reason why that was significant during the Buddha's time was there was just as much confusion about what Buddhism should be, or what any, there wasn't such a thing as an established Buddhism, but what a Dhamma or a Dharma should be.
And how could the Buddha say question everything, because the questioning would come from a deluded mind?
That's right. So of course he wouldn't say that. And of course, he is, the most important aspect of his entire life post his awakening was teaching the truth. So he certainly wouldn't dismiss people offhandedly, like saying, you know, if it doesn't, you don't like it, forget it. And so how can we do that today? We are so fortunate that we can take true refuge in the Buddha and his Dhamma. It's still here today. And you've heard me say this so often. One of the most remarkable things that I've ever come across is the fact that this true Dhamma is still available to us in its pure form today. We don't have to take anything on speculation, but we also don't have to be skeptical about the Dhamma. We can simply develop it. It's there. We can have the same experience that those people had 2,600 years ago. I know on retreat I talk about that. On retreat, we as close as is possible today, 2,600 years later, create the conditions that were very similar to that original Sangha, meaning that we, for those 4 days, we are guided by the Eightfold Path, not something else that has developed. These are the five hindrances to be mindful of. In order to abandon these five hindrances, one should develop four foundations of mindfulness. He doesn't give any other out. If you want to cease being affected by the hindrances, develop four foundations of mindfulness. And so over the summer, we got in depth about exactly what that sutta teaches and how it's to be applied. And this shows the importance of developing meditation within that proper framework and with that proper view of recognizing the impermanence of feelings and thoughts arising and passing away and recognizing the ever-changing present quality of mind. And then as we got into right after we went through the four foundations, we spent 5 or 6 or 7 weeks on the Anapanasati Sutta, which teaches the same thing, but in a slightly different context. You remember, that was a teaching that was using the accomplished monks at the time as an example of how to develop meditation within the framework of the Eightfold Path. And you'll remember that that also refers to, in its conclusion, that in order to do that, in order to establish the four foundations of mindfulness, and in order to establish breath awareness meditation as the proper meditation method, we must develop the Four Noble Truths. Both of those suttas conclude with pointing us to the Four Noble Truths and, of course, the Eightfold Path. The Dhamma practitioner remains focused on the body in and of itself, ardent, alert, and mindful, while putting aside greed and aversion, with reference to the world. And you remember as we went through the four foundations, the Satipatthana Sutta, that those instructions speak directly to the hindrances, but they also speak directly to impermanence and the not-self characteristic. The Buddha's incorporating the importance of understanding those three marks of existence and what we're here to gain true insight into. This Dhamma practitioner remains focused on feelings in and of themselves, always ardent, alert, and mindful while putting aside greed and aversion with reference to the world. So what's the Buddha saying there? Again, reinforcing the importance of recognizing the impermanence of feelings. Because what is the first hindrance, sensual desire? It's a feeling that overcomes us. And from a mind that is rooted in ignorance and driven to distraction by its own ignorance, will seize upon that. And it truly is a feeling that is now has a thought attached to it and now has a life of its own. The same thing with ill will. It's certainly a feeling. We can describe ill will as a feeling, can't we? A feeling that is impacted by thinking that itself is rooted in ignorance, where there couldn't be ill will there. And the same with doubt, skepticism, laziness. They're all aspects of this, of impermanent feelings that we make permanent, that we personalize. And a good example is, I can't meditate, I'm too distracted, and you leave. Instead of recognizing that that is part of these hindrances and to simply be present with it. It's okay to meditate when you don't feel like meditating. In fact, that I was talking about Lorna. Not that she never feels like meditating. The most effective and skillful time to meditate is when you don't want to, when these hindrances are coming up. That's the time to use the Buddhist teachings on four foundations of mindfulness. That's the time to use them to develop insight into impermanence. Because the more that you can stay with these feelings, all five of them, the less impact they will have in your life. Every time that we get caught up in any thought, especially a structured thought like one of these, and don't react to it, simply let it be and come back to the sensation of breathing, we're interrupting that conditioned thinking. That's exactly why we meditate. We're developing concentration despite these hindrances. Frank, you had a question?
Yeah. I was just going to, I was reflecting on my own meditation practice when those things come up. And if I give into them, it would be a hindrance, but it's just like anything else. It's just an observation, observing what's going on and then finding the breath. And I think I read somewhere in your literature that that's called right effort.
Yep. That's what the Buddha is teaching here in reference to the four foundations of mindfulness too, which is simply to be mindfully present with what's occurring without being distracted by it. But of course, as I should say this for Zachary, the best description I can give for awakening is a fully mature human being that fits most closely to what the Buddha taught. And so if you think about these hindrances, these are things that an immature mind would grasp on and use to justify not developing the Dhamma, running away, whatever the excuse might be, to not fully develop the Dhamma, or to begin to substitute Dharma's teachings that would allow us to continue with these hindrances that the Buddha talks about. There's some traditions that encourage great doubt, and I'm not putting those down, and I'm taking that teaching somewhat out of context. But it's simply not something the Buddha taught to recognize doubt as doubt and not mess around with it in any way. Don't play with it, don't encourage it, don't embellish it. Simply recognize it as present. Come back to the sensation of breathing. Because anything else that we do is giving something that has no inherent power, power.
So John, when you hear some people will use almost like tricks, counting tricks. Counting mm-hmm. up to 10, counting back to 10. Is that just creating something to avoid the hindrance versus observing it and seeing it arise and pass away?
I would say, I couldn't give a blanket answer because I don't know the underlying reason for someone to use counting. But what I would say is in the beginning of meditation, I don't teach it because I think it's something that you eventually have to let go of, but many people do. And they find it effective. So in the beginning of meditation, if that's what helps you to begin to meditate, that's fine, to use counting. at some point, I think you would naturally, that would naturally fall away. You know? But really what's more important during meditation is to be mindful of the instructions and why we're meditating. Mm-hmm. And so it's not just, we're not meditating solely so we don't have to be, we're meditating to develop concentration where a distracted mind is present. And using the instructions that we give and that the Buddha gives in the Four Foundations of Mindfulness is ultimately much more effective than simply counting. But again, that there's people listening online. If you find in the beginning of your practice counting, you know, and I should say, usually that is counting up to 10 and then coming back down, 1, 2, 3, 4, 10, 9, 8, 7, but however you might do that. And that is a helpful way for beginning meditators to start establishing a practice. But I would hope eventually you'd let that go. Frank.
Because I practice counting from time to time, but only in the beginning if I find that my mind is restless and I want to just notice. So I don't necessarily count up to 10 and back to 10. Like sometimes I'll do that if concentration is arising. But often it's just a beginning way to notice, okay, in, out, 4, and then I'll be on a thought, and I'll recognize there's a thought, and I come back to 1. And it's just another way of recognizing the mind is distracted, return, so it's all included. I mean, as you always say, that's part of the practice, is recognizing thinking and coming back and letting go of the thought. So, and I don't continue with that practice. It's just a beginning kind of way to help the mind kind of collect itself and unify around the object and the peripheral awareness, in a sense.
Yeah. So I wouldn't discourage it, but you notice that I don't teach it. I've found no reference to any other meditation method in the suttas than what we do here. So again, if you find it useful, but it's something. And again, the reason why I don't teach it is to me it's something that you would hopefully eventually put it aside.
Well, it's not a meditation method. It's just a beginning way, like stilling the
I don't
mind.
Know, but
I
think the question mind, the reason why I said what I said is the question might arise from everybody else. Well, why don't you teach it then? I just wanted to explain that, Frank.
I was just going to comment, not on counting, but on the hindrance. While meditating, it kind of gives, the hindrances give me the insight into dependent and origination.
Yeah.
I think where I'm connecting through contact or becoming, clinging and maintaining. So I have a lot more hindrances in the afternoon meditation than I do in the morning.
Yeah.
But it also gives me good practice for when I'm not sitting on a cushion, when I'm at work, you know, and I can reflect on the hindrances and the movement of the mind either towards or away from something, that gives me good insight into my own contribution to it.
Yeah, the Buddha refers to that here. So. Thank you. To abandon the 5 hindrances, one should develop these 4 foundations of mindfulness. That's the end of the sutta. The Buddha's reference to the 4 foundations of mindfulness shows that dispassionately recognizing and abandoning these 5 hindrances is fundamental to fully developing the Eightfold Path. Again, if we allow these hindrances to continue to distract us and justify whatever it is, not meditating, not putting in the right effort to develop an understanding of the Eightfold Path, or to incorporate other practices that would allow us to ignore our doubt or our ill will, or etc. The Buddha refers us directly back to 4 foundations of mindfulness when they arise, and when we know what that is. It's not some difficult to incorporate practice. It's simply to recognizing what's arising and coming back to the sensation of breathing and being at peace with whatever qualities are arising. And you'll notice, and we learned this over the summer and since the beginning, that all of this develops insight into the impermanence of all things and the anatta, the not-self characteristic, because we're able to recognize the arising and the passing away of all of these things, as long as we don't give them more power than they have, which is really no power. It's in our minds that we cultivate sensual desire, ill will, doubt, and skepticism. It's in our minds that we give in to laziness or uncertainty. If they're not, because they're a reflection of our own conditioned thinking, they seem real. It seems reasonable to give in to them, rather than to simply acknowledge what they are and continue with practice, whether it's on our cushion or, like Frank was saying, just during our mundane life. We recognize, as we integrate the Eightfold Path, we'll recognize these hindrances as hindrances. The Buddha teaches that. See hindrances as hindrances. It seems obvious, but why would an awakened human being say that? So that we don't do something else with them. So that we don't try to analyze them or pick them apart or wonder where they're coming from. Recognize them as hindrances. Treat them as hindrances. Treat them as a true hindrance to what you want, which is awakening. Let them go. If something was blocking me from the pot of gold, right? If something's blocking me from awakening, I want to have that same attitude. The Buddha's teachings on the four foundations of mindfulness establishes the fundamental mindfulness necessary to developing an awakened, fully mature mind. The importance of understanding the debilitating influence of these five hindrances is developed through the entire Eightfold Path and supported by many suttas, including, significantly, the Anapanasati Sutta, the Sutta on Breath Awareness, and the Samadhi Sutta and the Yoganatha Sutta. The second and sixth factors of the Eightfold Path, right intention and right effort, are a particular support with recognizing and abandoning the hindrances. Maintaining the strong resolve of right intention and engaging in right effort will provide the framework necessary to develop and maintain a Dhamma practice. Right intention is holding in mind the intention to put aside clinging, aversion, and deluded thinking and gain the profound wisdom of Four Noble Truths. There's more to this article. I may get to it in the other classes this week. All three classes in my talk will be on the hindrances. But that really makes the point of how important it is to be mindful of these hindrances, but also how simple but often not easy to recognize them and simply let them go, simply abandon them. But it's a fundamental aspect of the Dhamma that is often overlooked or treated in a way that's not very skillful. So that's tonight's talk. Any questions on what I talked about? Okay, what I'd like to do, since this is the last class, is any impressions you have about going through the course, what you found beneficial. If you have something you wish was different coming out of my mouth, please let me know. But most importantly tonight, how you're addressing this common problem of the hindrances in your life. And I'll start with Ram. I know he has no hindrances, though.
I'm just reflecting on how long my sloth and torpor and doubt from establishing a practice and really getting on with it. It's just so easy to say, not really the right time for that. It's too hard. I've got problems here, problems there.
Yeah.
It just takes that change of mindset, and yes, there is time, and yes, we put in the effort.
Yeah. And in the end, the more that you do that, you realize that there really is nothing there, and it is possible to engage in something that your self-referential ego personality doesn't want you to do. Mm. And that's how you gain control over your own mind. You gain the ability to think what you want to think when you want to think it, instead of reacting to these conditioned fabrications about how you should live your life, and especially engage with the Dhamma. Thank you. And it does diminish over time.
Yes. It can drop away pretty drastically, actually.
Yeah. With right effort and all the rest, and the rest of the Eightfold Path.
Because it becomes easier. In the end, the energy that you spend on going with these hindrances just falls away, and you have more energy left to just live your life.
Yeah. It's exhausting maintaining long views, maintaining anatta. It really is. I mean, that dukkha is often classified as stress. That's stress. It's ongoing stress. It's a pervasive stress that affects us deeply.
Confusing, going back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So once you let go of that, the minute you let go of that, it's like a downhill thing.
Yeah. You think about the great compassion of Siddhartha Gautama to understand that to me, that word ahipasika is the essence of that great compassion married with wisdom, because he understood this. You can't play games with this. Just try it out and you'll find out. You'll find out for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Lorna, good to see you tonight.
Good to be here, thank you.
How's that seat?
It's good. It's close.
What?
It's close, she said.
We could toe touch here. Following on from what Ron was saying, one word jumped out at me: debilitating. I can really latch onto that word. When I'm in doubt and not being comfortable in my practice, wondering whether I want to continue on with it, whether I want to choose a quieter mind over a distracted mind, and everything, hindrances. Debilitating is exactly the right word to use. I struggle all the time, every day, with lots of hindrances. But I guess there's just even a stronger thread, even though there's a stronger thread that keeps me going and keeps me pulling me along, I guess.
Yeah.
Rather than going the hindrances and actually giving up and totally giving up, not coming anymore, there's a stronger thread in me to keep on going. So that's really my lifeline. But trust me, I have the hindrances, all of them, and more probably. Thank you.
All 11.
Thank you. So
all 11.
Is that how
all
many
11
to mention?
Of the 5 hindrances.
So it's through your integration of the Eightfold Path that you're able to manage the hindrances.
It is, and I just emphasize the hepatico, come and see for yourself.
Yeah.
There are days I have no doubt times I have no doubt that everything that the Buddha said is absolutely truthful, absolutely correct, with as much compassion as anybody could ever gain in a lifetime. I truly believe in it. Some other time. that's where I am.
So that's an experience of impermanence too, isn't it?
Yeah.
The three marks affect everything,
mm-hmm.
including our Dhamma practice.
And then can I just say, I noticed I have an iPhone, iPad, and those of you who have iProducts, you double click on the home button to clear out your past
screens.
Apps,
mm-hmm.
yeah, that you've
mm-hmm.
opened, which I did it, because I don't close them as I go along like I should do. So I sort of double click and you swipe up to get rid of your apps. And there's a little picture on each app to remind you what the app was about. And you flick it up, you flick it up, you flick it up. But each one that you flick up is actually a time in your life that you were concentrating on that thought.
Mm-hmm.
You might have been reading something for, I don't know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes from this app or something like that. You might have been on this one for a while. But on another occasion, maybe later on in the day or the day after or something like that, you swipe it up like it's a nuisance to be there. But that was a thought that you held for so long on the preview when you were reading from it. And it just emphasizes just how impermanent thoughts are. Because when it's a when you see that thought at another time, it's no, it doesn't grab you.
Yeah.
You know,
get rid of it.
Yeah, you just
at
don't
the time
want
it seems important and significant.
Yeah, just dismiss it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing with the hindrances.
But at that time when you're in it, and that's your thought that you want to have, you want to concentrate on that thought. But that action of swiping up is actually kind of like the Dharma, that you realize if past thoughts are just fleeting, they're not really anything to get your hold, get your, you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what the Buddha's teaching. Mm-hmm. And so why place any significance? It's also an understanding of not self-care. Why place any importance or create any identities over things that are impermanent? Like in, you know, if in, as he taught in the can't think of the name, the Adita Pariyaya Sutta, that if it's impermanent, how could it be you?
Mm-hmm.
And why would you create? Why would you attach yourself to anything impermanent and call it me?
Suffering.
What's that?
It can only be suffering.
It can only lead to suffering.
Mm-hmm.
That's the essence. It's the essence of the Dhamma, and it's entirely practical. Thank you, David. Good to see you this evening.
I really like that you brought up the Anapanasati Sutta. I told you multiple times what that's meant to me. To me, that fourth foundation just gives you everything you need to know. The impermanence, the not self. And when I sit now and hindrances arise, at first I would try to push it down or push it away. Now I just observe it and give it the power that it has, which is little. It's like an aggregate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't need to grasp onto it. It is what it is, and it passes away. And I can do that off the cushion more and more as my practice develops because of that mindfulness.
And you've gained great insight into impermanence by watching that process.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the true teaching on gaining insight into the three marks. It's just that way, just as you describe it.
Yeah.
Thank you. And you're right, that's the Anapanasati Sutta with it, and the Satipatthana Sutta are so important. And they must be seen in the context of the Four Noble Truths. It would be useful. Thank you. Mary, good to see you this evening.
Good to see you, John. Good to be here with everyone. This is great. I'll be listening to the other classes this week. You know, this is hard stuff. And there are just some things that come up, you know, hindrances that come up. You know that they're hindrances, but...
Yeah.
You're still unlearning old behaviors of whether it's defensiveness or, you know, whatever it is in life that presents it. So the connection to impermanence helps shed light on the letting go of the hindrance in the moment. You know, I feel like every day in my work I have, because I think I compartmentalized my life, you know, work is work, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, for a long time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And now I rarely do that, right? I am the same person, you know, in work, out of work, in a long car ride, no matter where. But to be able to apply it in my work, like there's something I know I'm going into tomorrow, and to be able to look at it and already know that it's impermanent is very helpful. I think I'll be more skillful going into a very difficult conversation tomorrow, you know, being aware of that. So just trying to apply it in my everyday life, which is the Hepasuka, which is the validation to go on and continue, because it's because it's right.
Yeah.
So it's all good.
Thank you. That again, Mary, that's such a perfect example of a practical example of the Dhamma. You recognized the impermanence of this situation, and it immediately depersonalized it and de-stressed it. There was, maybe I shouldn't say there's no more you there, but there was very little
right.
I making left.
There were a
couple
things that David said on the towpath when this, you know, email came up, and you know, some of the things that he said helped to depersonalize it, and that's exactly what I need to do.
Yeah.
It all becomes about, you know, this thing, this me, my reputation, or
yeah.
my standard of executive leadership or something, you know. It's all not personal. There's nothing there.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
let you know how things go.
I can't wait to hear it. And eventually we realize that there's nothing in the world to take personal because there's nothing personal in the world. How could there be? Because it's all impermanent at three marks of existence. So, thank you. Andrew, good to see you tonight.
Indeed.
How are you?
These hindrances are distractions
yep.
In a general sense. You mentioned the one with laziness, slothfulness, and what was the third one there?
Drowsiness.
Drowsiness, yeah. But if that's one of them, isn't the opposite of those feelings, those preoccupations also equally a hindrance, like overactivity
yep.
and obsessive work or trying to accomplish things, and that also is on the same plane, I think.
Oh yeah.
Opposite sides. Yeah.
And those can be seen as a result of that first hindrance of sensual desire. It drives us to those types of excited states, you know, and it all fits into that, to that initial, and really that, if you look at the following four from sensual desire, they're all an aspect of that, and the constant need for sensory input is the predominant aspect of anatta, of a self-referential ego self. You know, and so it manifests in so many different ways. But thank you for bringing it up. You know, it's not just one way we might look at that, but it's all those. You know, and again, a practical example might be developing as a workaholic, because you have this conditioned view of who you are in your mind and where you need to go, and it just drives you to do these things that are all part of those five hindrances. So, thank you.
So a sangha distraction. I mean. That is taking a distracted mind out of one's normal distracted state is one of the big benefits of the sangha. It just
oh, absolutely
in a different place.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, in a place with, as you're walking in the door, you're carrying the intention, at least for that time, to leave it down on Harrison Street. You know, you're bringing, this is the place of, that's how a true refuge works, and we allow ourselves to do that here. It's one of the reasons why the Buddha said one of the most important aspects of the Dhamma was the Sangha, because we need the support of that true refuge in order to understand how these things apply in our lives. You know, we're so fortunate to have what's developed here. So, thank you. Helen, good to see you tonight.
Thank
how
you,
you,
John. Good to be here. For that reason you just mentioned, Andrew. Yeah, I've been dealing with the idea of impermanence and accepting what is and waiting for some things to become impermanent. impermanence is relative.
Sometimes it just doesn't come along fast enough, does it?
Right. You can't quite summon it up.
Well, and the happiness that comes when something's gone is impermanent, too.
Mm. That I have an easier time holding on to. I don't mind clinging to that. I confess. But sometimes identifying something gives you a starting point for watching it arise and pass. And so that's how I'm looking at a lot of things, as, you know, noting their arising and waiting or being more proactive, putting the effort into making them pass, and not letting doubt turn to fear, because that's as much of a hindrance. And I wish I had written it down. I saw this great, great quote by Amelia Earhart about not letting your fears and doubts stop you from doing something, stop you from right effort. And she described them as paper tigers.
Oh,
I thought
that
was kind of a clever description. So that's how I'm taking all of this off the cushion with me.
Great. Thank you. She certainly didn't let those things stop her, did she?
No.
Zach, welcome to our song. I'm so glad you joined us tonight. You might notice that we tend to laugh a lot here at our sangha, but that's what keeps you. You should hear us on retreat. We really let loose then. It's a pleasure to have you with us tonight. Any questions, comments?
No, just to add on to what everyone's saying, I think my experience recently has been that mindfulness has been really empowering. Like, kind of just shine it on all these different mind states, like anxiety and depression and anger. And after a few minutes, it'll just evaporate if I don't give it, if I don't feed those mind states or like latch onto the thoughts. They just disappear. And that's just been something so simple that just like really welcome.
Yeah, it's amazing how effective it is, isn't it? Well, again, thank you for joining our song. I hope you join us again. You've been on the website. I send an email out, a newsletter, Mondays and Thursdays, describing our classes and any other information that's relative. And always feel free to contact me, too, if you have any questions. Maura, good to see you tonight.
Good to see you, too. I have physiological sloth interpreter right now. There's a difference, yeah. There really is a difference between fatigue and sloth torpor, or whatever. He had some different words in there.
Laziness and indifference.
You're reading it, I was thinking about the Buddha's night of the awakening and Mara showing up, and which are all just the hindrances, basically. All those aspects that arose in his mind, and he sat there, sensual desire, and this and that, and the whole. I was just thinking of the dancing girls for some reason. I don't know why. They were present. The hindrances were present until his final realization and his final awakening. And that's always really inspired me to put them in their proper place. And so I think, it sounds like people are talking about hindrances in their like daily life, and there's hindrances in the actual seated meditation, let's just say, practice. I think that they are what they are. The mind works that way. They're just background noise. And sometimes, it's fine. I actually think it's very interesting to kind of just watch where they arise from, like that initial point of contact or something and a self gets created around it, and it's off into a wind-up thought. I think they're all just versions of the same thing, and I think maybe I have a tendency towards greed and sensual desire. It's kind of a more of a predominant rather than like worry and anxiety. Like everybody, I think, kind of has a, not that it's all of it's irrelevant, whether, never mind. So I mean, they're just things. They're just aspects of the mind, and I think the practice of staying with right view and right intention, whether it's during seated meditation or whether it's going into a difficult situation at work or or whatever, that's the predominant thing. I like, Lorna, what you had said about the thread of the practice is stronger than the pull of the hindrances. And that's been my experience, that the hindrances are really tempting when it's a really good thing. Like I have some really strong hindrances right now, just like in the mundane aspects of life. But they're there, and I'm not fooled by them, but they are definitely there. And the practice has been strong. My meditation practice has been super consistent for a long time now. And it's my mind feels pretty wild sometimes. So that's all I've got to say. Thanks.
Thank you. Russ, good to see you tonight. How are you?
Good, thank you. I think what I learned is just recognizing the hindrances when they arise helps you avoid being trapped in them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because if you can see it for what it is, it's a lot easier than just falling into it and then being in it for a long time, whichever one it is.
Yeah.
So I think that's what's important is to see it. And then you can apply the tools we've learned and the teachings we've learned to not let it trap.
That's the essence of these teachings too. But we have to have that framework in order to recognize it. Without the framework, these things come up and we just they seem like they're us. They're part of us. So what can we do about it? You know,
yeah.
Just live with it. But Buddha teaches we can develop complete liberation from these things that are so debilitating. Thank you, Frank. Good to see you tonight.
Good to see you. Good to be here. I wanted to thank you for writing the book and running the class and having the center. And what everybody shared is really good stuff. You know, I have the same kind of insight to it. For me, the hindrances have been lately teachers, you know, and recognizing them, acknowledging that they're there. I used to be, I guess my sensual desires were craving for, and my ill will was aversion. And I think it's important for me to see how it arises, because then that's where I can trace it through dependent origination. It gives me a broader understanding, gives me more of an appropriate view of my own contribution without judgment. I mean, so I feel non-attachment to it. And that gives me a lot of freedom from what I don't want to feel.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
It makes a lot of sense. Thank you, as always. Before I forget, sometimes you leave early, I'll be in Center City next Wednesday around noon. You want to have lunch?
Possible.
Okay, I'll remind you next week. Good. Bonnie, good to see you tonight.
Good to see you too. Working to not make decisions based on the hindrances.
Wow. That's good thinking.
And that's hard because if there's the pull to do what I've been conditioned and then to stand in this other place brings up a whole raft of other things based on standing in a different space. So that's sort of
thank you. And thank you all. It's been a wonderful, 3.5. Wow. Almost 4 months. Wow. Well, we missed some snow days, but what a great way to start the year, Bonnie.
I'm just counting how long it's been.
Yeah. So, and it really, from where I sit, and sometimes I can't help thinking back to when I first started down the street teaching meditation, just a meditation class, how far this Sangha, in all three, it's interesting how the Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday classes are somewhat unique Lorna comes to, you know, just about every class and some. But as a complete sangha, it really is remarkable. The development of what the Buddha actually taught has been here, and all of you talk about the practical experience of it in your life, which is ahipasika. You have seen for yourself the effectiveness of the Dhamma, and it really is remarkable. So thank you for allowing me to be part of your sangha. What else would I do?
John,
I think my head would explode if I didn't have an outlet.
Yeah, what's next?
Excuse me, yes, what's next?
We're going to have a pig roast and get a couple cases of beer. And what's next? Actually, it's interesting. Next week is going to be four classes at my Wednesday talk, I'm including in that, on the Buddha's first teaching, because I had a student kind of stand me up. I have a lot of information in writings about the Four Noble Truths and what they are, et cetera, on the website, but I've never put an article up on the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. And so I finally did.
Really?
Yeah, really. I was surprised. So next week, we'll for the first time in history, as far as Crossroad Meditation, we're gonna have the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. And the setting to me, and I'll repeat it, and I talk about it on retreat, but think about this, the relevance of this sutta first given, and it's a simple and short sutta, first given 2,600 years ago. And when you hear it and you think about that everything the Buddha taught for his entire teaching career was in the context of that first sutta and dependent origination, it's really remarkable. And it's such a telling sutta. So that's, thank you for asking. That's next week. I think I'm going to charge admission for that after that big build-up, though.
Is that setting the Dhamma wheel in motion?
Setting the only time that the wheel of truth was set in motion. Other schools will say that the wheel of truth was set in motion three times. The Buddha only did it once. So, another quick announcement. We have, I know we were talking about have a painting party at Raritan Learning Cooperative as kind of our Dhamma project. I had a meeting with Mary Beth last week, and what she really needs is two things. She needs a sign built and installed in their front lawn, and there's some deck repairs. So that's the new project. I'm going to come up with a date and ask for a lot of help, and especially anybody that might be able to help with putting the sign together. So then we'll go there and do some work for them. Probably after the retreat, I would bet. Coming up pretty quick, and that the retreat's in 5 weeks, so if you're going, please go and sign up as soon as you can. I think that's it. Okay, we'll finish like we always do with the Karaniya Metta Sutta. Yeah, and the other thing I was thinking about is while you're listening to, and don't be distracted by it, but while you're listening to the words of the Buddha on Metta, you can see how this Metta Sutta is a teaching on these five hindrances and to not allow them to overtake your life. So find your relaxed meditative posture and gently close your eyes and gently close your mouth. And take a moment to become mindful of the sensation of breathing in your body and notice the arising and passing away of your breath in your body. And these are the Buddha's words on metta from the Karaniya Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing and gladness in its safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, and being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Thank you all for a wonderful class. Peace.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. I welcome your questions and comments. To contact me and for guided meditations and instructions, Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos, please visit becoming-buddha.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Peace.